Good space time, y'all. In this episode of the Citizen Cosmos podcast, I speak to Eric Weinzein, tokenomics legate at Phi-Labs Global, helping to facilitate the economic innovations and Archway, a Cosmos L1 designed to reward developers. Along with Eric, we discuss counting cards, token utility, monetization, innovation versus Ponzi schemes, economic philosophy, game theory, rewards, and liquidity.
Just trying to find a nice niche in a place with great tech and terrible economics. We were having developers build economies, and that's not their forte. What they were doing to print money is not different than the US government does. I don't think everyone's going to make it, but what does make it out of this dot-com bubble will be the next Amazon, the next Google.
Because you either had to do a photo of your ass and a fingerprint of the head of your penis, send them that, and then maybe they would give you like, you know, $2,000 or $3,000. Before we rock it off into today's podcast, here is a roundup of the latest news from the sponsor of this episode, Cyber. The Cyber Congress DAO has been primarily working on improving the Bostrom Hub. This work includes testing of the contracts, new UI features, verification tools for on-chain governance, and polishing the Bostrom DEX, adding MEV protection, new web front, and bringing indexing of chain swaps. To try Bostrom, head now to oversib.ai. Hi, everybody. Good space time to y'all, as I'm used to say. Welcome to a new episode of Citizen Cosmos. And today I have with me a guest from Archway and from AstroVault, Eric. Eric, hi. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Serge, thanks for having me, brother.
It is nice to have you. It is a nice evening for me and a nice daytime for you. So it's good time on the time zone converter thing. I don't know if you know, when you put different time zones, there's little smiley faces. And for both of us, it's now showing a smiley face. So we should be happy. It's great timing. Eric, can I please ask you to introduce yourself and let us know what you're working on currently or anything you would like to add about yourself in general? It's all yours.
Thanks, man. Yeah, I'm Eric Weissenen. I am a co-founder of AstroVault, a new AMM being built on Archway. And upon meeting the Phi-Labs team at Cosmoverse in Colombia, recently joined Archway as well as their tokenomics lead. But aside from that, I also do quite a bit of tokenomics consulting in a lot of the Cosmos space and beyond. A bit of background, I studied economic philosophy in college. I do some master's courses lecturing for tokenomics as well. So just trying to find a nice niche in a place with great tech and terrible economics.
That is not easy, but you have found it, right? After all.
Yeah, so far so good. Just working with Phi-Labs has been amazing. AstroVault's development is going fantastic. And we all know that we're where the future is going to be. It's just a matter of how to build it properly and sustainably amidst so many crashes that we're finally seeing and will continue to see the way things are currently set up.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. And I have some questions for you about AstroVault and Archway a little bit down the road. But first, you've mentioned one very interesting fact, which I also want to talk to you about, the economics and philosophy. But before that, how did you even get to that point? How did life end up so bad? No, I'm joking. But how did life lead you to where you're at today? I mean, what did you do apart from studying and then suddenly working for AstroVault? Was there definitely, there was some route in between and whatever else, again, you want to add in there, throw in there, feel free.
Yeah, great question. So while I was in college studying economic philosophy and a lot of other things, I had good scholarships, so I just dabbled and took my time during my 4 years. I started working in a casino because, you know, applied game theory, why not? I started dealing cards, found some issues in applied game theory in some of their games, solved some of their problems and got into game auditing, game creation, everything game theory. I got banned from card counting from all the casinos, which was my side hustle. And so I was looking for a new side hustle and got into DeFi. So I was 2016 when I got pretty much banned everywhere from card counting. So early 2017, I started getting into crypto and I'm like, hey, this is cool. Look at all these Ponzi's that I don't have to invest in to capitalize on, and did okay as a trader. And it was just kind of frustrating seeing things not develop while developers kept doing brilliant, brilliant things and technology kept getting better and better. The economic attempts being tried were just, look at Olympus DAO's gaining popularity and crash. Look at Terra Luna, like things weren't growing economically. And we were having developers build economies, and that's not their forte. And so I worked quite a while to showcase different projects where issues were that they didn't recognize and also show them how they can solve them. Networked my way up, and eventually it's got the opportunity to work with my business partner Ethan from AstroVault to build AstroVault, which will be launching on Archway shortly after they go mainnet, and get quite a few consulting opportunities to help develop the space to match economically where development's going technologically.
Nice. Well, a lot of things to talk there about. And let's start with counting cards. Let's start with 2007. Of course. I mean, I had it prepared, but you know, it had to come from you. No, I'm joking, you know, but all the good stuff has to come from the good people. So I remember 2017, early 2017 in crypto. I remember very well. And I had a buddy back then. He would run private consulting and funds. And it was a small private fund based of some up to like 12, 10 people. I don't know really, to be honest, how many people there was. But the point was it's that all of these clients who were new, who came in 2017, were all card players, were all poker players. And I was like, well, now you say that it must be some, there was a whole, I think they had like a server on Discord where there was just like card players who would like talk crypto trading and crypto stuff. And I mean, but people who can count cards obviously have to be good at trading, right? Or is that just a misconception?
There's definitely a strong correlation there. I actually downloaded Discord the first time to link up with other advantage players, which is the generic term for people who gamble to invest. I mean, gambling and investing are the same thing with different connotative ROI. But if you can use gambling to have an expected positive EV, then it is investing. Likewise, you can invest all you want with a negative ROI and have it really be gambling. It is all the same. So yeah, people that figure out how to be net positive poker players, net positive blackjack players. Some people can do it with gaming different giveaways or whatnot with things like video poker. Any way you can consistently beat the house, any way you can consistently make profit investing, good on you.
But can you consistently beat the house? I mean, how consistently can, how often, how far would it go, right? I mean, there's got to be a stop to that.
It depends. There are ways. Casinos mess up. Banks mess up. I mean, card counting, like, you're not cheating. It is a legal way to beat a beatable game.
And if we were to take this from that to, I mean, I know it's not a direct correlation, but you did mention Luna, of course, and, you know, and one of the sentences, I'm going to take a slightly different way. There was a sentence you said, I even wrote it down, developers not equal economies. I like that. Let's go into that. And I don't know what to call Doc Won here, a developer or a bad gambler. I don't know. I'm not the one to make the decision. I mean, even though I am kind of affected, I was. But what's your take on that? What's your story here? Is that an example of bad economy or is that an example of bad gambling or what else?
It's a great developer that's dabbling in economics that took off because it didn't really have, I don't know, it did have proper auditing, just the people that were doing the auditing weren't invested. So you create your own echo chamber. I mean, what they were doing to print money is not different than the US government does to print money, but it is at scale a direct competitor. If Luna can be burned for UST and UST could be spent at a store, then Luna is an alternative to the Fed. And if your goal is to be a Fed competitor, then go for it. But anytime you're self-collateralizing, that's assuming that your entire market cap is collateral for this token, but realistically, the only money you have access to is the liquidity provided against your token, which is far, far less than the market cap for absolutely anything. So that's necessarily under-collateralized. And we're going to see more issues as we see new stablecoins set up and arise. Anytime you want anything over-collateralized, that's incredibly inefficient use of funds. And it's very rare for incentives to align for somebody to do that properly.
When you say properly, let's talk about properly. And I mean, you're welcome, of course, to mention how you guys do it in AstroVault. I mean, this is would be a good example. But what's properly out there in your opinion?
So what it would take to properly collateralize or over-collateralize a stablecoin, like right now you see with like Maker, they'll use things like Ethereum. Well, Ethereum has access to far more liquidity. Therefore, if it has a market cap of, I don't know, 60-something billion dollars, but it has at least $1 or $2 billion worth of liquidity, then now you're really collateralizing it with that much, which makes it under collateralized, but collateralized enough to make the token work at least like at scale for a decent amount of time. An ideal over collateralized coin would literally have more dollars backing it than dollars printed. But why would people choose to just leave dollars in this basket, not really doing anything other than backing this new dollar they create? It doesn't really align incentives. But if that's what people want, somebody has to figure out a way to properly pay for that. AstroVault is not launching a stablecoin, but would be better positioned to than pretty much any other group I've seen, because we will have a basket of treasury slash liquidity that we could liquidate in order to redeem this token, which other groups don't really seemingly have. Or if they set up, would seemingly be set up really cronyistic. I don't have a great view of stablecoins in general.
No, I think you're giving a very great overview, and so thank you for that. I think whenever a person underestimates what they're saying, usually it's good. So even though you said that sentence, I'm still going to try and go a little bit more down there, like one more question, if you don't mind. For them, I mean, I'm going to use those words, for the average degen out there, right? Well, or even not a degen, but, you know, like a normal crypto trader who doesn't jump into any crazy, whatever, farms or whatever. And we're not necessarily talking Cosmos here. I think we can talk in general in crypto. You have just, in theory, described a very good way of how you could do like an audit in a way to understand if here's the liquidity, here is the basket, here is the liquidation points, da 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 da, you know. But what can an average person, like, even if they know all that, you know, it's quite difficult to find all the data and to understand it yourself unless that there is somebody helping you to analyze a lot of things. What can the average user do in order not to get themselves deep in debt if they have chosen the way? I mean, of course, one is not to gamble and not to trade what you don't understand, but, you know, we're talking about crypto, so we are already here.
Yeah.
What would be the advice to those users?
My advice is understand the actual business models, because there aren't many. We have lots of businesses in the shape of DAOs now, and these businesses don't earn revenue, but they do have perpetual debt in, like, whether it's team operations, like infrastructure provision, like there's perpetual costs that need to be decentralized, but there's no revenue to back it. And there's this idea, this speculation that there will someday be revenue, but if they ever get to that point, how much revenue will that be? And will that justify the current valuation? And the answer for most things is no. The reason that we built AstroVault is because we want DeFi to be accessible to everybody. We don't want, like right now in the United States, you have to have $250,000 in order to invest your own funds and lose them. Like right now, any but regular person has to pay somebody else to lose their money. It's ridiculous. Give people the freedom to do what they want with their own funds and not have it be trusted by these third-party businesses that will just steal your funds anyways and leave you with nothing, like we're seeing with FTX. So I love the ethos, but it's not built sustainably. And large DEXs with a nine-figure valuations earn $0 in revenue. And in order to work, they have to have this high valuation governance token, which doesn't govern anything. It doesn't earn any rewards. It doesn't have the potential to earn any rewards. And even if it did, would it even justify its current valuation, let alone a potentially gaining value? And it's frustratingly dire if you truly look at the business models of most things being built. So as a consultant, as an employee, I'm trying to make sure that the products that I'm working with not only do contribute and create substantial value, but properly capitalize on that value with their token, kind of driving value to the token instead of to equity in companies, which is why people would continue to use this token that truly does have utility at scale.
Would you say that you understand right now what would be, in at least how you see it, not the perfect model, right? But at least a good model to change that? I mean, you talk about ways to drive value, about how to capitalize on the token, you know, about a lot of things, really. And those are really important things. Things I think a lot of people in crypto, especially if you're in this industry, you know, for more than 5 years, I think you understand that even if you're not an expert on that, you kind of begin to see those things and you think, oh, okay, there is a problem. There is nothing to feed this chain, nothing to feed this. There's no capital out there. So how do we change that? What do we do?
Yeah, I think EI, as far as layer ones go, so I'm not a huge believer in app chains in general. Note that we are launching AstroVault as a layer two on top of Archway. Not only does Archway have fantastic incentive models to reward application creators, which still won't be our primary revenue model, but also if you just look at the economics, hosting individual app chains is just higher overhead for perpetual infrastructure provision costs. And like, if another chain already hosts this infrastructure for us and we don't have to pay for that, might as well cut costs. That's not how it's currently viewed by investors, but I'm trying to think more than a year, more than 2 months in the future. I'm trying to look at the 10, the 30, the 50 year plan. And currently I think that's the better way to go. As far as layer ones go, if you're going to have this high inflation, you have to be able to counter this high inflation with some kind of combative deflation through the utility of the token. EIP 1559 did a fantastic job with Ethereum. I think that is the best current market standard for a layer one. And Cosmos people aren't going to like to hear it. We get compared to Ethereum. Ethereum has lower inflation with actual deflation and general token utility. We get compared to Polkadot, and it's like at least Polkadot's making revenue from the software they created. At its base, Cosmos created absolutely brilliant software and gave it away for free. And if you think of that as a legitimate business model, like that's not what happens. If people are software developers, they sell software as a service. They rent it out. They do something to capitalize from that utility. And the beauty of the decentralization of Cosmos is also what's drive this frustration, as you see voice in Atom 2.0, Atom 1.0, this attempt to give the Atom token more inherent value because it doesn't exist other than governance. And that's really common for a lot of things in all of crypto right now.
Well, TCP/IP doesn't have a token, right? And I mean, it works.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, I'm trying to be devil's advocate here a little bit. To be honest, I agree with a lot of what you said, you know, and in fact, with probably everything pretty much you said, I would go even further to say that the businesses that are built on those layer ones and layer twos often don't run themselves as businesses and often don't understand the costs that they have to incur over the day, that they occur over years and years. And then suddenly they kind of disappear and people are like, ooh, where did that validator go? Where did that project go? Where did that guy go? Well, because they need to cover that somehow.
And the users don't understand as well. I saw a Twitter thread recently, people comparing Kujira and Osmosis, and they're like, well, even if you're only getting so much of the Osmo staking rewards, you're still getting $230 a year. It's like, no, you're getting more Osmo. There's still only so much liquidity provided against it. And now Osmo has a ton of liquidity, the way they position themselves with the Osmosis DEX, which is fantastic for them, but you still only have the amount of liquidity pitted against it. If enough people wanted to sell, you can send the price to zero. There's only that much money available. And so not everybody's earning that $230 or something. They're all earning more Osmo. They're all earning more opportunity to be the one to siphon away that liquidity.
I understand where you're coming from. Actually, we had a debate. One of our formats that we do for YouTube is like a debate format. And we only did like two episodes so far, one with the Atom 2.0 paper and one with liquid staking. And the liquid staking, there was a very interesting point about what you say now. You know, the guys were talking about rewards, or rather I asked them the question about what is the future holds. And we had people from Persistence, from Stride, from Quicksilver, and from Lido, Finance. And my question was, but don't you guys kind of like, when they were explaining, I was like, but I mean, all the rewards are coming from inflation, all of them, like 100%. That is like a bound to fail model sooner or later. And yeah, it's a bit of a...
It's worse than that. And I've seen Jake Wan come out and talk about the governance risks, or the protocol risks of these liquid staking programs. It's worse than that. It's completely non-viable. And we actually just went public with our white paper. If you check the AstroVault white paper, section 6, we go into the math behind auto-compounding liquid staking derivatives, and then what we're doing with AstroVault, which will have a liquid staking component that does not auto-compound, but liquid staking derivatives will always trade for so much underneath the underlying asset. And it's mathematical. Like, there is no like, oh, this is an arbitrage opportunity. This staked Atom is trading at 4% underneath its underlying asset value. And then 4 months later, the same account, like, oh, what an amazing arbitrage opportunity. This staked Atom's like, maybe you're eventually going to realize it's just going to trade at 4% underneath its underlying value. And if that's the case, then it's not liquid. And if it's not liquid, then why are we using it? How is it better? You can have something auto-compound and not add a governance token, which isn't really earning rewards. If something is earning more rewards, it means it's taking more from its users. And everything's just really, really extractive. And it's just not economically feasible. So we're trying to coin the term protocol earned liquidity and have protocols actually gain value from the TVL they associate with what we're doing with non-auto compounding liquid staking derivatives in order to justify evaluation of the AXV token, where if users liquidity farm on AstroVault and they earn AXV, now you can stake AXV to earn Atom. You can stake AXV to earn Juno, to earn Archway. And you can also use the AXV token to have the liquid staked assets governance power in those layer ones directly, which right now we haven't seen DAOs have massive control over layer one networks. And the AXV token will actually, the more liquidity we generate, the more service we're providing to the Cosmos ecosystem and beyond as we expand Avalanche, Moonbeam, Polkadot, the more governance power the AXV token has. Meanwhile, so the way the proof of stake set up, we earn rewards from them directly to our DAO. And sort of like you keep your staking rewards, you get AXV, AXV gets this, set up as a Panamanian foundation so that the token holders are legitimately the beneficiaries that own this DAO-owned treasury.
But aren't the stake and rewards still coming from inflation? So, like, we're kind of still going the same direction, no?
Yes, but it's one thing to earn your own stake and rewards. It's another thing to earn somebody else's stake and rewards.
Mm.
So we will be earning stake and rewards from other protocols, which would then count as revenue for us. Now, it's still up to them to justify having a high valuation. But I mean, if we had, like right now, the top decks in the Cosmos ecosystem has, what, like 250 million in TVL or so, and like 20 million daily volume, give or take, like we'd be earning $72, $73 million in annual revenue with those numbers in our tokenomics, and they're earning zero. So that's economically possible without making technological advances that we outline pretty well in the white paper. And then at that point, as we build this autogenic treasury, we're earning these staking rewards that go to liquidity provision, helping decentralize this payment for liquidity provision, which all these layer ones have. It's then AstroVault's job and any other DAO that uses this model of protocol earned liquidity to be a VC that helps justify, helps make connections for these layer ones. Because if these layer ones do fail, if they don't sustain their valuation, if they do rug, then there goes that part of our treasury. So we actually need them to succeed. We're incentivized to go and pro bono help them succeed, because that's what our treasury is based in. Right now, there's this idea of we're all going to make it in Cosmos, which I'm sure you can tell, I don't think everyone's going to make it. But what does make it out of this dot-com bubble will be the next Amazon, the next Google, and things will do great. And so we think Cosmos has the best tech. It also has this opportunity of proof of stake that we can easily utilize. And as long as anything in the Cosmos ecosystem is what succeeds long term, then AstroVault and the AXV token will justify its value by having that in its treasury.
I think that a lot of like seeing with three or four now bear markets, well, this is the fourth one, I believe, that I'm seeing since 2011. So, I mean, I don't know, that was the first one, right? 11, 12. And then from there, it's interesting that so far the revenue and survival haven't been going hand to hand. So far, you know, having revenue, well, or rather not having revenue, didn't mean that the project is going to die. I mean, it was always more or less the tokenomics model. The tokenomics model really, really does play an important role. And if at least the system can't survive on its own juice, kind of, so to speak, for several years, it just dies out. And we've seen it already a lot of times. What is, in your opinion, the best or some of the ways, as somebody who works with tokenomics, in your opinion, to incur more value to Atom rather than the proposed solution that we already mentioned?
Atom has to develop something that other people want to use and charge them for it. If they're going to give out these massive grants or whatnot, they need to make sure that there's an airdrop to token holders. If the purpose of Atom is for an airdrop, then great. If they want to be this collateral, they have to make sure that Atom is the primary on and off ramp for the rest of the Cosmos, which also petitions them to have constant sell pressure from the more things that are developed. Like, something has to be that fiat gateway, and right now that's what Atom is best served at. Theoretically, I think if they are able to set up some kind of like super relayer set for IBC that people want access to, kind of like Polkadot has these limited spots, and they can incentivize people to use ICS for that reason. Like, right now I'm nervous about ICS. Why wouldn't people do ICS somewhere else if they choose to do ICS? I don't think that it's going to provide the value for the Atom token that they think it will. And frankly, I think that quite a few other tokens are better positioned to profit off of what Atom wants to do than Atom is itself.
I don't know if you know, I mean, I know, and I guess it's because of Atom 2.0, and that's why I mentioned it. I mean, because I haven't spoken about it for 2 years until the last month, and I've mentioned it like, I think, 20 times, but I cannot not help to mention it again. It's Prop 26, I believe, which behind which was rejected. It was the prop for in 2020 where we came with, I used to help cyber and ecosystem development, Bostrom. And our proposition back then, I think it was $50,000 an Atom for them to send to Multisig, in order for when Bostrom will launch, they will transfer at a certain locked value during that deal right then, tokens to the treasury, to the DAO treasury, whatever, a community pool, doesn't matter, of Atom. And we spoke that our main proposition of value behind it was, of course, diversification of the money that the chain has. And of course, to build incur value, that prop failed, actually didn't fail heavily. And a lot of people since then who have voted no, they came out and said, now I kind of get it, what you were trying to do, but kind of you were like 2.5 years early with it. And we're like, well, but fuck, like, I mean, you have to understand that if you have nothing to back what you do, sooner or later, the food is going to run out. And Yeah, but okay, you said one very amazing point. I mean, interchain security, cool, but why won't I go somewhere else and hire interchain security over there? Especially, let's say, if I'm a closed small chain, I'm probably going to go to Binance or somebody like that, that I don't care about. I don't care about KYC regulations. I'm kind of the guy who, let's imagine for a second, right? Probably I will choose them because they will probably provide more safety nets than Atom can, right? Osmosis Juno, yeah.
Osmosis Juno, Archway, Neutron, like anybody can launch their own ICS and then they can offer more incentives and they can bring more, like they can have more gates of like, this is only accessible. You can only have access to this if it's with us. And Cosmos, by being so neutral and by giving everything up for free, has less that they can reserve to people that choose to use them. I agree with all the points that like there should be a neutral hub and it isn't everybody's best interest. But in a laissez-faire society, nobody wants to pay for the neutral hub. But it's better for everybody if everyone pays for it, which means it has to be mandated. And they can't know.
I mean, and this is like me, you know, I'm like jumping around here with talking as we were, you know, talking rubbish for most of the time myself. But is there such a scenario where the Atom token doesn't have to have all those things and it stays the TCP/IP kind of thing where, okay, but having this token gives me access, well, to nothing really, but it kind of gave birth to this whole great IBC thing, which then developed and had its own value. But Atom, the scenario where Atom has some value just because, well, like Bitcoin, for example, does, but let's not go there. I don't know. Are there scenarios where it doesn't happen, the apocalypses that we're talking about, or...
Yeah, I mean, it's never too late to save almost anything. Just Atom needs to develop a really, really strong...
But without that, without developing an incentive model, I'm talking about like, let's for a second, not incentive model, what's the right word?
I'm talking about new software, something new without developing something new that's for sale or rent, then no.
No, okay, that's what I meant. I was saying, let's try to keep out of the picture sale or rent here, but so you're saying that is the only way. Okay, I see. Let's not back to, but kind of skip forward from this to Archway, because I'm curious also to hear on the front, because last time we had Archway, we had two or three people from the team, I guess, and it's been a while since then. And I don't know, I assume, because you guys are building on top of Archway, you'll be more familiar with the current scene and what's going on. And if you could update us, would be cool.
So yeah, first and foremost, none of my opinions are those of Archway or PhiLabs or anybody associated with them. I am an employee of PhiLabs. I'm their token economics lead, but there are plenty of other people higher than me that are doing more. They wanted to separate their platform with being focused on economic innovation, and they're doing a great job. And I just had the experience of being able to help put that on spreadsheets and in papers and whatnot to help iron it out and help lead them in the direction that they were already going. So their Archway is far bigger than I am, but what I love about them is from an economic philosophy perspective, which is my background, economics is focused on optimizing the systems in place. Economic philosophy is understanding why the systems in place were created, and then ideally optimizing those systems before then optimizing the system that is in place. And the idea of this printing token, so what does inflation mean to you?
Well, I think to me, personally, and I'm going to cut corners of economics here, there is two meanings to that word. One is, of course, inflating the monetary supply. So inflation isn't literally blowing into something and it's inflating. And I guess if we're going more into economics, inflation is when something loses value because of something that is not, there is no yin and yang or balance, so to speak. I'm going to, like, again, cut very much corners and go into philosophy as well. So something is losing value, and that's basically a result of inflation, and it shouldn't lose value in that point. So two meanings, I guess.
Yeah, no, you are 100% spot on. And so the second one you're talking about as something loses value is like what in the US where I'm based, they'll have the CPI and they'll measure basically how the price of the dollar depreciates compared to commodities and global assets. And they'll say, oh gosh, inflation's at 9%. Oh gosh, it's at 10%. That's really high. But at the same time, the first one you mentioned is called monetaristic inflation, or inflation of the monetary supply. And we've printed 50% or 100% of the dollar supply since then. So realistically, the price of the dollar has not depreciated even close to how much the monetary supply has increased. We're basically raising, arbitrarily inflating and raising the market cap of the US dollar because the price isn't depreciating enough, which it might eventually. But I am much more a proponent of looking at monetaristic inflation instead of the price effects, which is how we naturally see things in crypto. We're like, oh, we've got Atom token has a 7 to 20% inflation rate. Well, that's a monetaristic inflation rate. According to the US, the inflation would be how the price changes arbitrarily because we can't audit the Fed. So the purpose of monetaristic inflation is to decentralize network goods, to decentralize payments for things that everybody needs and requires. And when you look at how the Atom token was set up, the idea behind it was to incentivize decentralization and the security of the network, but it doesn't actually do that. It gives this inflation rate to these validators. So now you can, what, run a computer that costs you like $80 a month and profit $100,000 a month if you're like one of the top validators. And by doing so, you're lowering the Nakamoto coefficient and not securing the network. What they actually did, and I like where their mindset was, but again, it wasn't economists. What they actually did was they set up infrastructure costs to be decentralized through this monetaristic inflation, and they did it incredibly inefficiently. So there are a lot more costs than just infrastructure, but infrastructure is the only thing that was really optimized for, and it was not done efficiently. So what Archway had in mind is now setting this up like more things than just infrastructure. Like security of the network is integral, obviously. We're still going to be giving like this monetaristic inflation to decentralized payments for infrastructure. We will be giving these staking rewards to these validators, but maybe we should do it in a way that's not just incentivizing the top validators more than the bottom validators. What we have to do, like some kind of price of risk formula or negotiation. Or what if we want to incentivize more than just infrastructure provision? So part of AstroVault's purpose was to decentralize the payment of liquidity provision retroactively for all these networks, which we do. For Archway, however, they're like, we need developers to get paid. But the whole thought process behind it was like, why go build on Ethereum when it brings value to the ETH token, which is held by whales and doesn't bring value to the people actually building it? So everyone's grant farming. We wanted them to get rewards from the gas directly, as well as reserve some of this monetaristic inflation to help subsidize payments for these developers so that regardless of your current economical status, regardless of having to buy your way in, everybody is incentivized to go and build something new, build something useful, pretty, that actually gains traction on Archway. Because right now, everyone's grant hopping. They don't really usually have the incentives in place to have their app really be used. And so we see a bunch of apps that don't get used. But now if somebody comes in and they're getting constant rewards from the utility of their protocol perpetually, then things that previously have not been marketable or profitable now finally can. Tooling, DAOs, like things that are network goods that nobody wants to build because you can maybe get a grant for a while, but that's it, can now be built and used indefinitely to progress Web3 in a way that it hasn't been done before.
And what is the latest? Because the last time we spoke with Archway, this was more or less the idea. And the guys were just before another release. This was a while ago. I believe this was over a year ago. And I'm curious to know what has been the progression since then. Like, how is the network looking now? Is there a lot of, for example, yourself, you're an example of L2 building on Archway. Are there many other projects right now that you are aware of that are building anything on Archway? Are there a lot of active users that there were a year ago and so on and so forth? In general, not in numbers, of course, but in your own perception.
I'm aware of a good couple of high-profile, high-quality applications that are building out there. And so far, it seems their focus is more of getting a few really good teams instead of just a ton of teams that are going to build something to not really be used, which is what we've seen a lot of in general in this space. But things that will get adoption and traction because it makes sense for them to build on Archway. We'll have more content like calculators to see like what kind of rewards you're looking at through the utility of your apps coming out pretty soon. I built them. But it's gaining a lot of traction, as well as what they're offering with Area 52 and these new CosmWasm contract classes and partnerships that they're making with blockchain clubs at universities. More talent is being onboarded to build on Archway. And they're really seeming, I don't want to put words in their mouths, but they are seeming to position themselves as a profitable access point for the Interchain Hub. As more app chains come out and more brilliant things are developed and there's more that needs to be done than is allotted in one chain's block space, as interchain accounts become a thing, if you access everything from Archway, it's more profitable for the builders. So if you go build something on Secret Network or Injunctive or Axelar, and you want it to work interchain, then have people access it from Archway, set a premium for it, and you can get paid for people using other chains with a seamless user experience, which will be built out on Archway.
Since we mentioned ICS, interchain security, and you mentioned something like, well, if you know, Atom creates ICS, anybody can create ICS, and you know, I can then go to anybody who offers me ICS. We do talk to a lot of chains, and of course, I mean, by the way, Area 52 is something I personally retweeted the shit out of. Just recommend to anyone who wants to get into smart contracts. It doesn't matter if it's Cosm Wasm or anything else, but of course, if it's Cosm Wasm specifically, because it is about Cosm Wasm, Area 52 guys, it's fucking amazing website done by, I believe, guys from Archway, right? And great, really, really great tooling, like to learn what's going on behind Cosm Wasm, under the hood, sorry, of Cosm Wasm. But back to the question, sorry for that moment of advertisement. it was coming from deep inside the heart, I swear. You mentioned like, well, anybody can go to ICS interchain security, right? And it's true. Anybody can really do that. But then the same we can do with what Archway proposes, right? I mean, you can divide and create as many multiple pools or community pools, developer pools, whatever. You're the reward of the token. You can divide into a million different small partitions and actors. Why will I go to Archway as a developer? Why would I choose or that over other chains that are already now starting to offer similar incentives?
A lot of it will be how good and resourced the team is. They raised $21 million. They are a lot of the core members of the Ignite and Tendermint team. So their connections are fantastic. They're well-resourced. They're also well-purposed, and they know what they're doing. They know why they're doing it. It's not like, let's go do something and we'll figure it out along the way. They're taking a very, top-down approach of like, this is what we need to do to get where we want to go in a way that's regulatorily compliant and safe. And I, for one, really appreciate that from my experiences in DeFi and crypto in general. But yes, there needs to be some kind of stickiness, some kind of user retention. And if no other chain can offer substantially more or something substantially unique than Archway, and Archway is the first mover to build out this kind of, not Cosmos hub, obviously, but potentially like developer hub, then it will gain the traction. Like, why do people still build on Ethereum when it's one of the really like one of the worst tech-wise of these smart contract platforms? Because other people are doing it, because that's what's known. And it will still be profitable even well after Archway is established. It will still be rewarding to go and build a new application on Archway in a way that's not the case for something like Ethereum. So barring somebody else offering substantially more in some kind of unforeseen non-economic way, then Archway will have a very strong level of stickiness in my expectation.
It'll be interesting to watch those developments in terms of like the battle of L1s, especially like related L1s. So like, let's say, so to speak, parachains or zones or whatever, or rollups are on the same play. It'll be interesting how those competitions will develop. And I mean, you mentioned validators making 100K per month. So that is by definitely not the top of the numbers to where it can go during bull markets. And I'm talking at 1-0 is very, very modest.
Yeah.
And I know personally because, well, I mean,
to run a computer.
Yeah. I mean, we've never been a big validator, but we're a small validator. We run like four, including Cosmos Hub, four chains, I guess. But even for us during the bull market, it was, yeah, of course, we never saw numbers like that, but nowhere near close. But it was numbers that were substantial. And that as a validator, you understand you're a business on this specific blockchain. Your idea is to try to put the capital back into using the capital again into the cycle. And that's one more question, actually, where I'm coming from is, I mean, you said Archway is heavily focused on developers. I mean, validators and other actors still do exist. So will Archway, as far as you know, again, of course, and I'm taking into account what you said before, that you know you're not a member of the Archway team, but still...
I am.
Well...
I am now, but yeah, I'm not speaking as one. Full disclosure, I am now.
I'm sorry, Eric. I meant you don't represent the opinion. I'm sorry. I apologize. Yeah. Let me correct that here. You mentioned that you don't represent the opinion of the Archway team, but still, in your opinion, personal opinion, is that heavy focus on developers and on development? And I'm kind of wanting to remember IOTA here in a way. with the very heavy focus on scientific like thing. Of course, different things. Question down the road. Sorry for the long thing. Because of the heavy focus on developers, can that cause a problem to attract other actors around the ecosystem?
Yeah, coming from my experience working in their token, as their tokenomist, it's not something that's gameable in a way that can hurt the security or sustainability of the network. We've made sure of that, and we'll have more releases coming close as we get closer to mainnet, which should be nice and eye-opening and good conversation starters for the rest of the Cosmos ecosystem. Yes, I suppose validators will earn less tokens proportionately compared to a network with higher inflation where all of it goes to the validators, but that doesn't make it not profitable. And even then, validating itself isn't very hard. What these validators do to earn and attract business usually is something else, but that's because we've had to adapt to the poor economics that have been in place where now my business is marketing and being an influencer, but my funding for it is coming through delegations. It's like, if you're going to be an influencer, get paid for being an influencer, or have it be paid from the community pool. Like, why do influencers have to run a computer when that's not their expertise, which might make it a little bit less secure? Why is everything so tied into infrastructure providers being the only ones getting paid? It's kind of weird.
I think that the point here, from my personal opinion here, and I will speak from the other side, of course, I don't think that the amount of influencers today are anywhere near as high as those who have started validators in their own garage, not even in their own garage, but in their own mom's bedroom 15 years ago. Well, not 15 years ago, sorry, but that was, of course, 2016. Yeah, 2006. I'm talking about 2016, first Depos nodes kind of thing, pictures, and then from there, I would personally, and of course I'm biased here, but our business at first was always content and then becoming a validator because we realized that in grants, for example, for various things, or back then it was literally impossible to go to the community pool. And the best example is Prop 26 there, because people would not give you one penny back then from the community pool unless you were a developer. And going to the foundations was pretty much impossible because you either had to do a photo of your ass and a fingerprint of the head of your penis, send them that, and then maybe they would give you $2,000 or $3,000, and you'd be like, okay, well, where the fuck do I get the money from to create the content? I'm having the team, So I think a lot of the influencers, and I understand what you're saying, but I would rather see some of those influencers run validators than, I'm going to be honest, I have seen some, I've personally run my first node in 2016, and I remember how it was and what it was. And, sometimes those guys, at least, they're business focused. They take that as a business and they run it and they put the value back into networks, where the other guys, well, all they care about is, like you said, attracting a little bit of rewards, getting 100K down the month, putting it down, changing that to another token and changing that to fiat and, buying a couple of Lambos. So I'm not sure which one is worse here.
I don't disagree, and I'm not attacking content creators who are running validators. By all means, they should. That is the current way to get paid for this kind of stuff. I have also done it. What I am saying is it's weird that's what they have to do. If what you need as a network is perpetual content creation, then that should be a network good that stems directly from monetaristic inflation. And now that's difficult to do and to potentially quantify. And so it's simpler to do from validator, but it is weird that literally the entire monetaristic inflation is going to infrastructure providers in a way that does not optimize for a raised Nakamoto coefficient. It does not optimize for actual decentralization, does not prevent against Sybil attacks, things currently, from not looking at anything subjective, but from an overview perspective, are not set up in a way that's logical or that one would set things up in a vacuum without any names or faces attached.
Of course, I think that that's the best example of a free market. When the market offers you an opportunity, that's what you do. I mean, in an ideal world, it would be, I had the experience of launching the first ICO in 2016. And since then, I've seen a lot of tokenomics validators come, go up, down, do different things, think that what they're doing is the number one thing. Unfortunately, though, end of the day, in my opinion, what turned out to be the most realistic model that really does make sense is actually what you're saying, that in your opinion, you don't think it's the way it should be. It's interesting that we come in here from different perspectives, But I do honestly think that currently, and I actually, it's funny that you say that, because a lot of them, you call them content creators. Well, I say ecosystem developers. There is a big difference between, you know, creating YouTube videos and between actually being able to use your network in order to bring value to the system, whether it's via partnership, via, I don't know, connecting the founders with the right marketing team or with the right developers, or getting the right developers coming to develop on the specific network. So to me, that model still seems very, and by no means I am defending it. By no means I'm taking it as an attack, but I'm just kind of trying to be fair and show two sides of the medal, because you're saying one and I'm kind of, okay, there is another side of the medal, and the other side of the medal is that there is literally no other way to acquire value for those people right now. So that is the reality. And that's, yeah. Well, we'll see, of course, in the future how things going to change. Other than that, it will be, of course, interesting to see, like I say already, what would new models, what kind of actors they would attract. I was talking to one of the founders of Litecoin the other day, not the biggest project, of course, in terms of capitalization, but very heavily in development. And it's interesting that we were talking about very similar subject, about the subject of validator sets and a diversification of the people who validate in those sets. And, you know, she was saying a very interesting point that it's cool to have a set where, you know, 50 of your validators are professional node runners. But you've said yourself a very good sentence, developers not equal economics. And I think here to have a good chain, okay, if your chain is really apps, if you're an app-specific chain, maybe you want to focus. But even then, you want to be able to have like an opinion, in my point of view, of wide range of minds. And that's what creates decentralization. Well, as much of decentralization as we can go. I don't know if you agree with it.
Yeah, and decentralization is a net good, but it's not the only thing that's optimized for. A lot of things that get overly decentralized get nothing done. So some kind of fine line needs to be walked. But we're making good progress in general in the entire Cosmos ecosystem, but also Archway is making good progress at ways to better what is currently in place. Lots of big thinking, even if they're small changes that will have a large impact. And I'm excited for it. The kind of economic revolution that we're starting with Astro Vault, where we're getting protocol earned liquidity and showcasing solid business models with dApps, will hopefully cause a wave, or more of a going for protocol earned liquidity instead of copying cronyistic or Ponziistic things that have been done in the past. There is innovation. There is success in future in crypto, in DeFi, in GameFi, in NFTs, but it's not what's been done. You have to take those next steps. You have to develop them in a way that's sustainable. You have to have tokenomics that will drive value to the token through the utility of whatever you build. And that's being built in quite a few places. And that's encouraging.
Definitely agree with you. As long as it doesn't end up like what Doc won, because he also promised it all, but that didn't work out very well. Eric, a quick blitz quiz. It's not very quick, but it's up to you, of course. I don't know which depth you're going to answer the questions. You're welcome and feel free to answer as much as you want. Three projects outside the top 20 that you find technologically interesting.
In the Cosmos ecosystem dimension, you briefly mentioned Rollapse. I think Dimension is brilliant and really, really interesting. I'm not a huge fan of the app chain model currently being pursued, and think that that might be the real way to vertically scale the Cosmos ecosystem. Yeah, I mean, Archway is a lot of the basic Cosmos SDK stuff, but they'll be launching their technical paper soon, showcasing what models that they added to the Cosmos SDK, which it is a lot of the original builders as well. But it kind of takes some of what exists in Atom that hasn't really been able to be properly utilized, and it expands upon it in a way that's economically brilliant. So I care much more about the economic innovation. Yeah, and obviously look for Astro Vault, but Alter's doing some really cool things as well. If you've heard of them, right now they're a private kind of like communication platform that uses technology of Secret Network, but they're doing a lot of really brilliant development work. Their CEO, Oscar Yepsis, is truly a brilliant mind in the space, so he's one to watch for.
Two things that motivate you to do what you do in life?
My family. I've got a wonderful wife of 8 years and three beautiful daughters. And I like putting food on the table for them. And I like my wife being able to be a stay-at-home mom and to teach them. I want to be able to do something that they can look back on and say like, hey, like my dad helped make a difference. My dad helped better the world in some way, shape or form.
And last one person doesn't have to be in crypto. It could be a developer, could be an economist, could be a content creator, could be, I don't know, a writer of a book. Anyone, somebody you recommend to follow that would help people to, you know, achieve their goals and be successful in whatever they do.
You know what? Follow Griffin Anderson, the CEO of Phylabs on Twitter. He actually has a really small following right now, but he's going to be more active coming pretty soon. So that would be a good person to start following early because he's a really, really brilliant person that is often preferred to stay behind the scenes that I'm excited to see step out of his shell more because the dude's fascinating to listen to.
Eric, thank you very, very, very much for your time. Let's be hopeful and watch the development of and your launch, guys, sorry, and not just the development, but also the launch, of course, and then further the development of the protocol and its life and Archway included, not just AstroVault. Thank you very much for finding the time to join me. Thanks.
Thank you, Serge. Love what you're doing.
This content was created by the Citizen Cosmos Validator. If you enjoyed it, please support us by delegating to Citizen Cosmos and help us to create more educational content.